Hey, dear listener, so it looks like my Ice Skating episode was the most played I ever made
on this podcast.
Probably because it featured Christina, and, you know, Christina has a lot of friends. So I was thinking, why not exploit her even more? Get her to do another drawing
of a cutie-wutty fuzzy-wuzzy little cryptid critter nobody ever heard of.
So we did it. Only this time, instead of having a wheel on its ass, this little critter has a big mouth.
Just like me.
But no worries, I filled in a whole hour talking about not much info on this critter, but we do talk about raccoons.
A lot.
Their cunning, their cleverness.
Just how cute they are.
And how they potentially interact with alligators on a very personal level. A very freaky, disturbing, sexual level. What else do you expect from my show? Okay, guys, so we are back today with Christina again.
Hello.
And I don't want to say what we're covering. I'd rather hear Christina pronounce this word in her Pennsylvanian accent.
So today we're going to be talking about the Coonigator.
I was thinking you're going to pronounce it something like Coonigator.
Coonigator.
Ah.
Coonigator.
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 Now, listeners, I'm sorry if that's offensive, me not being American and whatnot.
Coonigator. I'm sorry. I'm done.
Okay. If it was not obvious enough what this thing is, can you, Christina, actually describe to that one listener what we're going to talk about?
The one listener, our biggest fan. The Coonigator is supposedly the body of a raccoon, like a regular trash panda, and the face and snout of an alligator.
And where can we find this delightful beauty of Mother Nature?
It is in Vermont, and it is in a town, and I'm going to butcher it. I'm going to try not to, but I don't speak French. But like here, we would say Montpellier.
Yeah, yeah.
Montpellier.
And I mean, Montpellier is actually the capital of Vermont, but it was named after a French town by French colonists.
Yes.
Like, it's like Des Moines, Iowa, but yeah. Some people would say Des Moines.
Exactly. Like here, the accent here is so crazy. Like people would say Montpellier and Des Moines. Instead of Campbell, they would say Campbell, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just basically just saying it how it's spelled so I don't make our one listener mad.
I'm going to pronounce it like Montpellier.
Yeah.
I'm not an American. And I'm not French.
Exactly. And I think a majority of people would probably pronounce it like that.
Yeah.
So I think that's fine.
Have you ever actually been in Vermont?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been in southern Vermont.
So you know this all from firsthand experience.
Yeah. I mean, Vermont's a pretty state. They got moose. Wasn't prepared for that.
Apparently, they also have Coonigators.
Yep.
So listeners, the Coonigator is a cryptid that I've been aware of for maybe the past decade via the internet. Mostly because, as we'll find out, the literature does not mention it very often.
There's like a paragraph. It's real informative.
Yeah. And it's just like the Ice Gedunk.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the Ice Gedunk, we keep making episodes on these things that only have one single paragraph on them. So we can just bullshit for an hour about anything.
Actually, I think the Coonigator has more stuff out there than Ice Gedunk does.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we just want people to, you know the obscure cryptids, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Get their brains working.
You know what the thing is? So the most information we got was from Cryptopia, and the article was written by Rob Morphy, who does Cryptonaut podcast, as we all know. And as we all know, Rob likes to cover very weird things on Cryptonaut, and the standards of the entities and cryptids they cover is very, very low. But for some reason, even though Rob wrote this article, he never covered the Kunigator.
I don't recall them, yeah, doing an episode on that.
I'm like inclined to think that the Kunigator is so bottom of the barrel that not even Rob would want to cover them for his podcast. So hey, we are now filling in the gaps.
So I wonder, have they ever covered the Jackalope?
No, but I don't think so.
Exactly. So what if, and this is just a theory I'm throwing out there, what if this creature got the same treatment? Like, you know how the Jackalope was like a badly taxiderm, you know, bunny?
Yeah.
What if somebody in somebody's attic somewhere in Vermont, they have this taxidermy raccoon with a gator snout, and they only bring it out at the holidays to show the family and the family how they caught this thing?
Okay, so we're going to go into the story, but like, I literally have a whole list of theories that I've prepared, and I did not think of that. And it makes actually a lot of sense.
Yeah, it just popped into my head. Like, it literally just was like, hey, what if it's this?
So listeners, according to the literature of the internet, the Kunigator seems to be a raccoon-sized mammalian thing. It resembles the raccoon in its body shape. It is covered in thick gray fur. It has a very rounded body. So, you know, a raccoon. It's also found around dumpsters near campsites around Montpelier, the capital city. But the only thing peculiar about it is once people approach it thinking it's just a raccoon, they see that it has what appears to be an alligator snout filled with sharp teeth. And this scares the fuck out of them because we all know raccoons are nocturnal, so these sightings are possibly during nighttime.
Which raccoons come out and usually get into your garbage at nighttime. So it makes sense. Makes total sense. And then the alligator face, I mean, that's so legit. I mean...
Now, you know how if you shine your headlights on a raccoon, their eyes will glow. Just imagine seeing this thing, like a little mammalian creature with the head of an alligator and flashing eyes. So per the literature, this creature is encountered, as we said, around Montpelier, around dumpsters near campsites. People would at night see a little creature and think it's just a raccoon and approach it and see this gaping maw full of sharp teeth and then just run away in fear and terror.
Because that's what I do when I see a raccoon. I run away in fear and terror.
I mean, they can have rabies.
Well, yes, but usually I'm just chasing them out of my garbage. So, yeah. If I saw one with like a alligator head, I would probably like be like, hey, there's my garbage. You have as much as you want. I'm going to go back inside. Just clean up after yourselves. Carry on with your business.
Do you actually think if this thing has an alligator head that it's really eating garbage?
What else would it eat? But the thing is, raccoons just don't eat garbage. Like, they fish and other small mammals and whatnot. The only reason they're eating our trash is because we leave it out for them.
Yeah, and they are actually omnivorous. Like, I did a lot of research into raccoons today. Into the legit science. So raccoons are omnivorous, and yeah, they eat small animals like worms, insects. They can eat bird eggs. They like that. They're very opportunistic. Like, they would not hunt down animals if they have some other food source. And most of the time,
they
like prefer nuts, mostly walnuts and fruit. Mm-hmm. I heard down in Florida, they eat like citrus and watermelons and stuff like that.
Yeah, they'll eat anything. That's why they're called trash pandas. We have raccoons breaking into chicken coops because they can, and they eat eggs and they eat chickens.
I think they'd rather eat the eggs than kill chickens.
Yeah, but if it's there, they'll do it. Yeah, they'll do it. Yeah. Especially like in the fall when they're, you know, when it's going to get bad. And then in the spring when they're having babies, it's a free for all out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have parties, regular parties in my yard. Yeah. Raccoon parties. It's a thing. Not Kunigators. Raccoons.
So per the literature, like that's basically the gist of it. It's a raccoon thing with an alligator head, and people shit themselves when they see it. So per the lore of the internet, there have been like numerous reports and sightings of this thing. And past few decades, these sightings have been growing in numbers. But the thing is, I can't find any sightings of this thing.
Right? Like if it's been growing in numbers, like who are you telling? Like you see this thing, or are you just telling Uncle Bob and Pete?
And they constantly keep mentioning some kind of researchers who have looked into this thing and have been telling people, oh, it's just an opossum, and there is no way that an alligator can have sex with a raccoon. Who are these researchers? There are no names.
I would like to know who they are, too. And two, the whole possum thing is interesting to me.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
In theories, like, I've prepared a lot of theories, except that theory you mentioned earlier, and it actually makes the most sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so the thing is, like, we only have these few paragraphs. So the description of the thing, that it's around dumpsters, where it is found, and that apparently there have been many sightings that have been growing in numbers for the past few decades, and a lot of researchers involved. No dates, no names, nothing. And that's just that. So if you go on any website on the internet, you will see copy-pasted information, and there is one peculiar thing you will find, that is that they refer to this area as the area around Mount Pelier, two words, Mount Pelier like a mountain, instead of Montpelier, the capital of Vermont. And the thing is, there is no Mount Pelier, there is no mountain named Pelier in Vermont, there is just this city, and the city is not even named after a mountain. So whoever copy-pasted this information has been inadvertently showing that they did not do their research, and unfortunately this appears on Rob Morphy's article as well. So I think, like, maybe Rob Morphy's article is the instigator of all this, but it was written in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how he had American Monsters, the website, before?
Yeah.
Do you remember? Yeah, I remember that, like, from my childhood. And at some point, it went down, and it was switched over to Cryptopia. Well, I was not into cryptids anymore, briefly.
Well, you are now.
Yeah. Well, this article he wrote was in 2011. I don't know if it was on American Monsters or not. I think I found an archive of American Monsters, and the post made there was 2011. So I tried to go, like, back in time, finding the source of the story. And the book that Rob mentions is a book that I actually have. It's called Monster Spotter's Guide to North America, published in 2007. And the reason, the sole reason I got this book, which was around like $15, was for the Coonigator. And there is literally nothing on the Coonigator in there. Just a few paragraphs.
Yeah, don't they have to compare it with something in the book?
You mean, don't they have to have sources?
Yeah.
Well, they don't have sources. This book is more tongue-in-cheek. It's like a bird spotting book, but for cryptids.
Nice.
Yeah. So this book is from 2007. Mm-hmm. Now, I go to Google Books, and I search up Coonigator. The only result I get is the Dictionary of Cryptozoology from 2004, which I don't, unfortunately, have, because there's no way for me to get it in my country, and there is no digital version. From what I can find, the earliest mention of the Coonigator, 2004, in the Dictionary of Cryptozoology.
So, do you think that article originated that, or do you think it's just basically a copy-paste, copy-paste, copy-paste?
I think it's a copy-paste. Like, possibly there is some other source that I can't find from earlier. I doubt that the Dictionary of Cryptozoology would create a whole new creature for just one entry of the couple hundreds they have in that dictionary, you know? So they had to get it from somewhere.
Well, that seems to be the fate of a lot of them, though. Like, Iskadunk, it's the same sentence, and we truly mean sentence. Copied and pasted, copied and pasted, copy and pasted. The Hodag, the same stuff, copy and pasted, copy and pasted.
Yeah, and the thing here is that we actually do have this term Mount Pelier, which does not exist, as a common trope that appears throughout the internet wherever the Coonigator is mentioned. So we can actually see that people really are copying and pasting this without any research.
Yeah, exactly. So That happens to a lot of them.
But the only book that I do have, this Monster Spotter's Guide, actually correctly names the city as one word. It does not use the term Mount Pelier. So I think at some point, somebody on the internet fucked this up, referencing this book.
Wait. Somebody on the internet fucked up? What? Are you kidding? Wow. I am blown away by this information.
Yeah.
Shocked. I am shocked at that revelation.
Yeah.
I searched. Like, after we talked about it the other day, I went on the map and was, like, looking all over the place. And there is no Mount Pelier.
So I want to segue into this. There is this other website that mentions it. It's called Mythical Beast Wars. And this website is essentially some kind of contest for artists to draw mythical monsters and send in their drawings. And then they are judged and they pick a winner. So the Kunigator was in one of these contests. Did you see the drawings on that website?
I think I did. I had been doing a bunch of research on it, and I pulled up a bunch of different sites with, like, artist renditions of what this thing looks like.
Yeah. So that's why I'm segueing into this. It seems like the Kunigator, there's not much info on it, but there is a shit ton of art of it, because it has inspired a lot of people with this idea, this cute little fuzzy animal with the head of an alligator. So a lot of artists actually went on and drew their interpretations of this thing. And one of these artists is... you.
Yep, I sure did. It was a lot of fun to draw. That's for sure. I could see why they're into it.
So just for the listeners, like, can you elaborate what actually inspired you to draw the piece that you did? They can see it as the episode art. And what was your mindset while drawing this beast?
Well, it first started with us talking about it. It's on our list of cryptids. When you said you wanted to do an episode, I was like, okay, let me do this. I thought back of all the times I've had to chase raccoons out of my garbage and how ridiculously stubborn they are, and they will not leave unless you, like, go after them. They would rather just sit there and be like, whatever. And it's always at night, and it's always, like, in plain view of your house. Like, they're sneaky, they do whatever they want. I also wanted the little critter to have, like, a little bit of cuteness involved, because raccoons are real cute.
Or because that's how you portray monsters always.
Exactly. Like, I was like, I go back to, okay, if this thing really existed, what would it look like? You know, how would it exist in our world?
If this thing really existed, would you hug it?
No, because you shouldn't hug rabies vector animals. Please don't hug raccoons, guys.
Okay. So as for rabies, like, I researched into it, and compared to dogs, raccoons are actually very timid when they are infected with rabies, and they essentially hide away and die on their own. They do not get aggressive. Yes.
No. You know, since there's no cure for it, you may not want to get bit by one. When I drew it cute, like I normally do. And I drew it, like, just having a snack. Like, what would a raccoon be doing?
What would a raccoon eat? A fucking banana.
Hey, you know what? It was ripe. Whoever started that banana didn't finish it, but the Kunigator was darn well gonna finish it, okay?
Oh, yeah. the funny thing is, like, you did draw it bipedally, which is something that raccoons are known to do. They're known to sit on their ass and look like they're standing upright. Now, I'd like question, how would that work with a very heavy crocodilian snout? But the funny thing about that snout is it has a snout of a crocodile and it's eating a fucking banana.
Here goes back to how I always do it. Think about how that creature could exist. Like, if it actually existed, how would it actually interact with its surroundings and eat and et cetera, et cetera? Having, to me, when I look at this, having an alligator snout doesn't actually mean to me that it's going to have this enormous out of proportion snout. To me, it's going to have a snout that looks like an alligator snout, but it's proportionate to its body and its head, so it could still eat.
Yeah, so it's like, let's say, the duck-billed platypus. It has a bill, but it's not a duck's bill, even though it looks like a duck's bill.
Yeah, it's proportionate to its body, and it could still do everything it needs to. So that's how I drew mine. Like, yeah, I drew it where, yeah, it has an alligator snout, but it could still eat a banana because the snout is not giant. So that's how I drew it.
And I mean, we already mentioned that raccoons are omnivores and that they'd prefer plant-based food if they can get their hands on it. So the banana would be perfect. And it's full of calories.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, hey, a nice tasty banana in the garbage. I mean, what would you pick? Would you pick a banana or would you pick, like, an empty soup can to lick out?
I'd pick a banana, because if the banana is closed, once you open it, like, it's sterile inside. It's not dirty.
Yeah,
it already comes in its own packaging.
Exactly, exactly. And somebody threw it away. So hey, the Kunigator is just being environmentally responsible.
Yes. Yes.
Cleaning it up. And later he's going to poop it out and it's going to be fertilizer.
I also see you incorporated the moon as always. And I really I really like the atmosphere of this piece.
Okay, your house is right there. Your trash can's right there. This guy's come along and been like, hey, I'm going to get me a snack. So...
You know, like, the atmosphere actually goes with the lore of this creature because we already said people see something at first that reminds them of a raccoon, and then they slowly approach it and slowly start seeing the outline of this alligator snout. So when I look at your piece, because I have bad eyesight, when I look from a distance, I actually see a raccoon with a banana. The banana is so bright. But when I look at it more closely, then I see that alligator snout, and I think you capture that very magnificently.
I thought about my experiences here growing up in Pennsylvania, the times that we've come across raccoons. They're sneaky, they're eating your garbage. Most of the time, they're not even going to bother to stop and look at you because they don't care. But then by the time you get up there and you look at them, you see what they look like. And that's why I was like, well, what if this guy is just snacking? He's having a good time eating his banana and somebody comes running out of the house to chase him away. Well, they're not going to see him until they're right up on him when he turns around to look at him.
Yeah, I really like how on the internet, there are a lot of interpretations of what this thing is. And I like that you took the more grounded approach. It's mostly a raccoon and it has a modified snout. And that may go into some of the theories I have.
Yeah, because I wanted him to be able to eat. You know what I mean? Like I said, and like we talked before, it's like I take the creature and kind of make it where they can actually exist. Yes. Like what would they be doing if they actually had to exist?
I mean, if this is something that eats garbage, then it cannot eat garbage with a full alligator's mouth, you know, because an alligator is an ambush predator. It just hides in the water, waits for something to come by, and then just snaps at it and eats it, rips it apart by rolling around. This thing, if it's eating garbage, then it should have something more akin to the snout of a scavenger, that being a raccoon.
Exactly. Like it could still have an alligator snout just modified for its size.
Yes. So yes.
That's what I did. That's how I come about it.
Okay. So right now I wanted to go into theories on what this thing is. Christina, do you think this is maybe a raccoon, a misidentified animal, or a cryptid as in a completely new animal that's undiscovered?
I mean, it could be both. I mean, what if it's like a raccoon that was born a little different? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Had something going on with it and its mouth ended up looking a lot bigger than they normally do. And then they just put two and two together and was just like, oh, it's got a big mouth. We're going to call it this because it reminds us of that. Could have been like I said earlier, you know, when we were talking, you know, Uncle Bob may have had a taxidermy.
That's my favorite theory.
A raccoon, an alligator snout, and he only takes it out at holidays to show the kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, maybe it came from there. And then he got together with his buddies, his fishing buddies, and then they all start talking about it. So then it just became part of their folklore.
Okay, so that's, I need to be honest, that's the most epic theory I've heard today. And I haven't read it anywhere. Like, this is why I have you on the show.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, I need to sift through the all of these other theories that I've come up with to come to your theory, which I think is the best one.
I mean, look at the jackalope.
Yeah.
Look how widespread that's become. Like, we know that there's rabbits. Exactly, exactly. We know there's rabbits that have the herpes, and yes, it grows their crazy, like, horns out of their head and everything. But the actual jackalope is just a taxidermy bunny with antelope horns.
Yes.
So, I mean, what's to say this isn't that? Like, maybe somebody's grandpa has a Kunigator in their attic, stored away. You know what I mean? The Hodag's the same way.
I actually have a theory that adds to your own theory, but we'll get there. So
right now
I want to talk about theories if this is an actual cryptid, like an actual undiscovered species of animal or a monster. Now I've come up with three explanations for this. One explanation is what people propose on the Cryptid Wiki and other things. Two of the theories are from my own biological perspective.
Okay.
So the theory that you probably saw on the wiki is that this is a hybrid that came about when a crocodile and a raccoon had sex.
What? You know, I don't even know how that would happen. You know what I mean? Like, if you think about it, like, I know people don't think about it, but if you stop your brain for a minute and be like, okay, how could this possibly happen? The fuck it couldn't. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to happen. Like, who's going to lose on that deal?
That's the problem with people who speculate about cryptids that seem to be chimeric amalgamations. They always go for things like genetic hybrids. This stuff can't really occur in nature. So in nature, we have something called ethological isolation mechanisms. And these are basically barriers set in place by natural selection and evolution in order to prevent hybrids from forming, because hybrids are not well adapted to survive in the environment where they're born, you know?
Yeah.
So these isolation mechanisms can exist in many different levels of the process of reproduction. So let's say you have two species, and the first level of this isolation mechanism is basically that the behavior of the two species is completely different. Like, they may be bred at very different times if they share the same habitat. They may use different food sources, so they may have different ecological niches. They can live in different parts of the habitat, so they don't come into contact with each other. And even if they do, you know how birds have different songs they use to attract mates? So,
yes.
Yeah. So animals which use some kind of courtship, the courtship is an isolation mechanism because every bird has its different song that is unique for its species. So two individuals of the same species can recognize each other and not go on producing hybrids with another species.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that two species actually come to the situation that they do have intercourse. Then you have the isolation mechanism of their anatomy, because their sex organs are not complementary to each other. But I mean, that's not stopping otters from what they do to baby seals.
Yeah, well yeah. Otters are perverts. I said it here, folks. Well, it's kind of like, would it be like, you know, like mules? They can't have babies. Like, yes. A mule, you get one mule. That's it. Two mules can't get together and have babies. Is it kind of like that?
Yeah, only this is anatomical more. It's like they can't physically have sex because their sex organs are very different. But let's say they can have sex, like a horse and a donkey who produce a mule. So you have another isolation mechanism that prevents fertilization, because every sperm has something in front of it called an acrosome. This acrosome reacts to chemical signals from the egg of the female, which attract the sperm towards the egg. So you need to have complementary sex cells which will attract each other. But even if they do attract each other, once this sperm with its acrosome reaches the egg, this acrosome needs to react to hormones of the female's egg cell, which enable the acrosome to release enzymes to essentially breach the cell wall of the egg.
So much science today.
Yeah, but like, that's just... I'm just saying that so you know how many levels there are to potentially forming a hybrid, how many barriers there are preventing that from happening. But, you know, like...
Yeah, it makes sense.
Horses and donkeys are very, very closely related, unlike raccoons and alligators. They can actually breach the egg and fertilize it. But then you have this isolation mechanism. If a hybrid is born, it has a very different number of chromosomes, and this hybrid is not able to breed, and it is sterile. And this is in place to prevent the hybrid from actually forming a population which is not adapted. It's not suitable for the environment where it lives.
I tell you what, if we're not entertaining, we're informing. You just had a whole ass biology class right then.
Oh man, this is only relating to the hybrids. I have two other hypotheses that are from my biological perspective. Like, how would a raccoon and an alligator even have sex?
Yeah, that's still in my head. I ain't even gonna lie. I'm thinking about it. Like, I know anybody listening to this is thinking about it too. So don't even think that, you know, yeah, you're thinking about it. I don't, yeah, like, how would that happen? And two, like, how would that happen?
You know, when we're with otters, like, otters are rapists, as
they're
we all
very
know.
Bad.
And
yes.
if you didn't know, listener, just Google otters and baby seals.
Yeah, they're terrible.
They sometimes even attack birds and have forced copulation with them. Obviously, this cannot form hybrids because birds, like alligators, have a cloaca. They don't have...
Yes.
So there is...
Maybe that's how the ice skedunk happened.
What... reproduced with what?
An otter. Yeah, an otter went and tagged something.
Oh, man. So,
but anyway, that's all... We're going to figure that out.
So all these mammalian cryptids are actually the result of what otters do in their private life.
Yeah, yeah. No, so we'll figure out. Maybe, though, you know, we'll have to explore that a little bit.
You know, actually, raccoons and otters are very closely related.
Oh, there you go. But yeah. How would the alligator come in? You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, yeah. The otters seemingly don't choose.
No, little perverts.
I don't know how much of that we'll have to cut out because we're essentially sharing rape jokes.
Well, I don't know if they were jokes. It was more of like, they are literally nature's perverts.
Mm.
Like, they're bad.
And listeners, if you're interested in what otters do to baby seals, just check out my Darwin's Deviations episode. It's episode 21, and it's called Sadistic Scumbags from Outer Space.
Mm, it's brutal.
So enough about otter rape. There is no way that an alligator and a raccoon can produce offspring. No way that they can even copulate together. The sources actually state that these so-called researchers stated that an alligator would rather just eat a raccoon, much less have sex with it. But
yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I sent you a link yesterday from National Geographic, I think. It was something that happened in Florida. Somebody took a picture of a raccoon basically surfing on an alligator, and it went viral.
Yes, I remember when it came out.
So I'm going to post that in my episode description. Like, it's very funny, and you can read articles on that.
Yeah, I think the raccoon was just taking advantage of the situation. Like, he just saw a way to get from one side to the other, and he had to act fast, because that alligator would have eaten him.
Yeah, I mean, raccoons are very, very clever creatures. I could see him using the alligator as you use alligators in that Frogger retro video game.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yep, riding all over the place. Yep, yep, yep. Anything that has, like, hands is usually pretty damn clever.
Okay, as for raccoon hands, so they are carnivores, and they are in the clade of carnivores, which includes bears, dogs, weasels, skunks, and all these carnivores have webbing between their toes, but the raccoon does not, and this gives them a lot of dexterity in their fingers.
Yes. Like, out there picking locks and shit, opening your door.
There has been research into that. They have tested their lock picking skills, and it said they found out that raccoons can pick locks as well as macaque monkeys.
Yeah, they're clever. Like, here, anybody that has a chicken coop, they usually have to be really secure. Like, they have to have, like, multi levels of security, because the raccoons will figure out how to open them. So,
and you need to lock up your garbage because that's apparently very important in your life.
Yeah, they'll crack that open real quick.
So onto my biological theories, like, the hybrid hypothesis is totally out there, and we're crossing that off as a possibility. So my theory is that this can be one of two things. The first thing is deceptive mimicry. You know how a lot of animals actually look like some other animal but are not that animal?
Yes. Well,
what if this is some kind of organism that is, let's say, carnivorous?
Mm-hmm. But likes bananas.
Yeah. But let's say it's a carnivorous beast or a reptilian creature, but it actually evolved alongside with raccoons. It shares the same environment, and it evolved an adaptation of mimicry. It resembles a raccoon superficially, most importantly from the backside, because raccoons have a lot of natural predators. There are bobcats, there are coyotes and wolves. I have read that a very prominent predator of the raccoon is actually the great horned owl.
Mm-hmm.
So what if this is some kind of predatory creature that looks like a raccoon in order to lure the raccoon's predators so it itself can eat those predators?
I mean, it makes sense. Like, Mr. Horned Owl could be swooping down, being like, oh, got me a raccoon, and then all of a sudden, chomp.
Yeah.
You know, these big, you know, these big teeth come out and grab the bird.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. Yeah. But I mean, I am not sure if I know any mammal that utilizes deceptive mimicry of another mammal. Like, this is most prevalent in insects. There are flies that look like bees.
Yeah.
And the reason they look like bees is so nothing will touch them, because an animal was once stung by a bee, it remembers that, it sees the same coloration of this fly, and it does not want anything to do with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Usually animals who utilize deceptive mimicry are actually pretty harmless animals who mimic a harmful animal in order to evade predation, because they live in an environment where there is loads of this original animal they're mimicking, which is actually dangerous. So the animals that come into contact with this dangerous animal have a bad experience and then go their way and remember this. And the next time they stumble upon something colored the same way, it will just avoid that.
Yeah, we have those bees. We have tons of bees here, but we have the flies that look like bees. So yeah, they're really good at their job.
Yeah.
There's been times where I'm like, wait, is that a bee? No, it's one of those flies.
Yes. And so my second theory is that we already discussed this. Like, what if this is actually an alligator that went completely north to Vermont and just adapted to its new environment?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, like, how would that work? Like, it's a very cold climate. If an alligator ended up there and evolved through millions of years, because this cannot happen in just a few decades, as people would like to assume.
Yeah.
Now, there is something called convergent evolution, which is the concept of two organisms that are completely unrelated, evolving the same body plan because they live in the same conditions and utilize the same resources and same sources of food. So let's say you know that a shark is a cartilaginous fish, and you know that a dolphin is a mammal. So they are completely unrelated genetically, but they have essentially the same body plan because they both hunt the same way and they both live in the same habitat. So it's essentially like nature has this perfect optimal body plan for a certain set of ecological factors, and animals which share these same ecological factors, the same ecological niche, utilize the same resources and sources of food, will develop the same body plan.
And I don't know if this is going to be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is it dinosaurs that they think probably had fur or feathers or something?
Yeah, I mean, there are different ancient reptiles that we can talk about. So what you are referring to is possibly theropod dinosaurs, which eventually evolved into birds.
Mm,
but there were were reptiles that we call dinosaurs that were actually mammal-like reptiles. They were known as synapsids. Technically, synapsids are these ancient reptiles and us mammals. We are all synapsids. We are all the same. We are all part of the same group. It's just that today's mammals evolved from these ancient synapsids who are now extinct. And I think I saw on the internet on a few of these articles comments like people saying this could be a remnant of an ancient synapsid. So let's say, yeah, maybe it's a remnant of an ancient synapsid, or maybe it's just some ancient alligator that ended up in Vermont. It would adapt to the colder climate by forming a rounder body, because the more north you go, the rounder the body is of a creature. The raccoon is a perfect example because it can be found anywhere in the U.S. Now, raccoons in Florida are much leaner and much lighter and much smaller than the raccoons up north, like in Vermont. The northern raccoons can actually have up to 50% body fat ratios.
Okay.
And that's because they live in a colder climate, so they need to be rounder, they need to be fattier to isolate themselves from the cold.
Yeah, they need to be chunks.
Yeah. So let's say this alligator ended up in Vermont, and it cannot survive in its aquatic environment because it doesn't have the same food sources as alligators do in the south. So it needs to transform from an aquatic to a terrestrial lifestyle, but now it is susceptible to the cold. So it gets rounder and it gets this covering of gray fur, and it essentially evolves to look like a raccoon because it is utilizing the same ecological niche as a raccoon. And as it is a very slow animal and cold-blooded and whatnot, it cannot actively hunt. I mean, alligators never actively hunt. They just wait in ambush.
Yeah.
So it just evolves to eat trash.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That makes sense. Like, you know, the whole evolution thing and everything. But.
But that is speculative biology. Like, evolution is a whole process that takes millions of years.
Exactly.
To produce any results.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's like, I'm still going to go with the taxidermy thing. Sorry, guys out there, if you really think it's like a legit animal.
Yeah. Like, so, like,
This is all speculation.
These theories I presented are like the most possible theories on what this would be if it is an unidentified animal.
Exactly. Yeah.
But what if it was a misidentified animal?
If it was a misidentified animal, I would lean towards the whole thing about being a possum.
Yeah, yeah. And that's maybe
And the reason I say that is how possums act when you approach them.
How do they act?
They really won't hurt you, but if you approach them, they freeze and they hiss and they show their teeth. And if you get any more closer, you know, sometimes they fall over and they just lay there. But most of the time, their only defense is their mouth. Like, their only defense is their teeth. And they open up really wide. If you saw this and you didn't know what you were looking at, like, their heads in proportion to the rest of their body, like, they could have really big heads and really big snouts, and the rest of the body could be smaller. Or they could be really fat too, like raccoons with this big old mouth full of teeth.
And you know what's more interesting about possums? They have this whitish face. So if you see that in the middle of the night, it will fucking freak you out. It looks like a ghostly monster.
Yeah.
And it has pitch black eyes.
Yep. They're really slow. They're really quiet. Yeah. I mean, their ears lay back a little bit. Their ears don't stick out like a raccoon. They kind of lay back a little bit. I mean, I could see somebody looking at it, hissing at you and being like, holy shit, what is this animal?
My first thought is, like, people who live in these parts obviously know what a raccoon is, but I guess they'd obviously know what a fucking possum is and what it looks like. But if you're looking at this in the dark with its ghostly face, with its elongated snout and these teeth and hissing, and you're filled with dread and fear, then I guess you can mistake it for something else.
You know, the tail is real freaky looking too. I don't think anybody native to the area or local to the area thought of this. I'm thinking maybe it was somebody from out of the area that had no idea what either of these animals look like. You know what I mean? Like, somebody visiting or whatever saw this creature, and that's how the information spread too.
Yeah, because it is found. Does that make sense? Yeah, it is reported around campsites. So we can assume that these are campers who are just visiting Vermont.
Damn tourists. I'm kidding. But yeah, like, maybe some tourists were in town, you know, city folk, didn't know what a raccoon looks like, don't know what a possum looks like, caught one of them rummaging through the garbage and was like, what the fuck? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't really know, like, can opossums get pretty big that you can actually mistake them for a raccoon? I think a raccoon is much, much larger than a possum.
It just depends. Like, I've seen smaller raccoons that were the size of a possum.
Mm-hmm.
And if a possum has a chance to eat the hell out of something and get really big and fat, it will. Like, it's just like a raccoon. It's going to take advantage of what's offered to it. And I've seen really big, fat possums that could have been the same size as like a smaller raccoon. Like, I've seen some really big raccoon and I've seen some really small raccoon.
Yeah.
And in between. So maybe it was just by chance they saw something like a bigger possum or something. But the possums fit the description of the fur. Like, raccoons vary. Like, raccoons are like grayish. They could be really dark. They could be brown. Possums they're usually gray.
And their face is like clearly very different than the rest of their body. So if you approach one in the dark, you would see that its head is something different. Like, it does not belong on that body. I can understand that.
Yeah, and the way they walk, you know, they just kind of go around. Yeah, it's weird. Like, when you first see one and you've never seen one before, it's really kind of strange. I mean, I grew up here, so I'm used to seeing all sorts of animals and having interactions with them. I'm thinking, like, if I was coming from an area that didn't have these animals and I saw one, I'd be pretty tripped out because I'd be like, what the hell is this thing?
Have you ever actually seen a great horned owl eat a possum or a raccoon?
No.
I'm thinking, like, how does that happen? Like, raccoon can get very big and very heavy. So how does a great horned owl actually kill that thing and take it away?
When they're a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because raccoons start kicking their young out. They're still young. Raccoons are still pretty small.
I think it takes like 18 weeks for them after birth to even open their eyes. And they're hidden away in a den somewhere.
Yeah, they're still a smaller size when they're kicked out of the den. So I have no doubt that a great horned owl could take one at that size. When they get bigger, like some of the bigger ones I've seen, there's no way. Like, a coyote may have a problem with some of the bigger ones that I've seen.
Yeah. So another thing I had on my mind is like, what kind of predators live in Vermont? So the only ones I can find that could possibly be mistaken for a raccoon are bobcats, but they are much larger than raccoons.
Yeah, bobcats are all over. Yeah, bobcats are still smaller, but you know what you're looking at. Like you can see if you line up a raccoon with a bobcat, there's a really big difference.
Yeah, even if it was a fat and short bobcat, the tail is very different because bobcats have this very short stubby tail, not bushy like raccoons have.
Yeah, and raccoons walk around like their back end is humped up and they kind of walk a certain way. A bobcat strolls around like a cat or a dog would. Like they have, you could see physically that this animal's more proportionate with walking around than a raccoon. Raccoons kind of scurry around, sneaking around and doing
things. Yeah, they have that little scurry. It looks like they're always up to something the way they walk.
Yeah, they have a waddle. They have a waddle too. Yeah. So, I mean, you're not going to mistake a raccoon for a bobcat. You're just not.
So the only other option we have, if this is a misidentified animal, is what if, believe it or not, you'll be shocked by this theory. What if this is actually a raccoon?
I mean, what if the raccoon was born with like a darker face? Like, let's just say its face was all black. Or it was all black itself. And maybe it was on the bigger side. And whoever saw this creature was like, well, it doesn't look like a raccoon. The snout is like different. It's bigger and it's darker. The only thing that comes to their mind is that this could look like it's an alligator. It keeps on going and it becomes the Coonigator. Does that make sense?
I mean, it does make sense. Like I went into some other theories, but like that's the more plausible one. It's just a raccoon that is colored a little differently. That's plausible because that can't happen.
Yeah, or you know, how about the animals that are born with like extra noses and stuff, or their mouths are bigger because they're born with like a double mouth because, you know, for whatever reason.
Then this Coonigator thing would sprout from only one sighting because I doubt there would be a whole population of these things sighted throughout decades, you know.
Well, of course, and you know, we know what the real deal is, but you know, if it was like that kind of thing, if it was a real creature, like, you know, yeah, I mean, I don't know of any other theories that would make it a real creature.
I have another theory. So what if this is a raccoon that has sarcoptic mange, just like coyotes in Texas being called chupacabras, but having mange?
So a raccoon with mange, because I've seen them here, is really weird looking. They lose all their fur. They lose all of their fur eventually, and they get the scaly skin.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. So
in a way, I can see somebody seeing this and being like, oh, it's got scaly skin. But how would they account for like the rest of the body? Like, how would they know it was a raccoon?
What if the mange affected only the face? What if it was the beginning stage of the disease?
I mean, that's a possibility too. Like, what if they just have scaly face and like legs or something? Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good theory.
I mean, the same disease actually sparked the myth of the Texas chupacabra. So
yes.
maybe all of the cryptids are mangy animals.
From experience, like a mangy looking animal is really strange. They act strange. They look strange. It's just a really strange thing to see. We had a mangy fox that lived near us a couple summers ago. Really had to take a double like glance at it because I didn't know what I was looking at.
I saw on the internet, like foxes have mange, especially on their face. It really looks reptilian.
Yeah, it looks so. I mean, your theory about that, the raccoon having it, is like pretty, you know, I would say it's pretty good.
When we're on the topic of mangy raccoons, do you know what the Montauk Monster is?
It's a raccoon. It's a dead raccoon that got washed up.
So for listeners, like maybe I'm going to link the Wikipedia or something. The Montauk Monster was an animal carcass that washed up on the shore of Montauk, New York in 2008. It went viral. All media outlets were writing about this being some kind of genetic anomaly that was created in a lab on Montauk because of those conspiracy theories going on around that place.
Yep, exactly. They theorized it came from Plum Island,
which
is an island off the coast that houses like crazy different like diseases and viruses and shit. You know, as we were talking the other day, like, I think it's just a raccoon. It looks like a raccoon. It has damage to its face, but it could have been roadkill and swept away and washed up. Something could have been chewing on it. If you've seen a dead raccoon, you know you've seen that.
I mean, the Montauk Monster is also hairless. So even if you look at the picture of that carcass, you can see what a mangy raccoon would look like without any hair.
Yeah, or it could have lost its fur just from being in the water so long.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a raccoon, guys. Sorry. Sorry. Direct your hate mail to Darwin and not me.
I mean,
send him emails, angry emails.
It is my podcast and I'm doing the editing, so I am fully responsible for anything that you that pisses you off right now.
I'm just joking. No, really. I mean, if somebody comes to me with a better theory, I'm all for it, but...
Lauren Coleman himself actually said that the Montauk Monster is probably a dead raccoon.
Exactly.
And this thing was even discussed in academia. And I even saw a post on the internet once before. Some paleontology professor at a university was constantly using the Montauk Monster as an example of just how different animal carcasses can seem after they're exposed to the elements compared to the actual organism. Because as we said in my last episode, like paleontology, dinosaur science is very speculative. You only have a few remains, and then you have to add meat and skin and fur and feathers and whatnot to all that to have a visualization of what this creature actually looked like.
Exactly. I mean, I thought that when it first hit and it was viral, I was like, that's a damn raccoon.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what I immediately thought of. And then the other people, oh, you know, a second Montauk Monster. Dude, it's animals being washed up on shore.
Do you remember that? I don't know what it's called, but it was a sloth that was bloated and it did not have fur. They thought it was an alien.
Yeah, they thought it was an alien. Yep. And it's like, no, it's a sloth that probably was dead in the water for quite some time.
Well, since we are talking about animal corpses, let's go to your theory.
The taxidermy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I mean, if it's not a real creature, supported by one of the theories that we've already talked about, it's got to be a taxidermy.
How do you explain somebody witnessing this thing around a dumpster other than this wacky, eccentric uncle just throwing away his taxidermy and somebody stumbling upon it?
I think with the dumpsters and everything, I think it was somebody not familiar with what a common animal looks like a possum or something.
Okay, then how do you fit in the theory of this being a taxidermy?
The taxidermy, to me, I'm trying to think how to place it.
Okay, so, I think I get it.
So to me, I think if somebody saw it near a dumpster, it was a mistaken identity.
Okay.
But if somebody was going to take it further, somebody could have heard about this or whatever and put together their own Coonigator.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's essentially like the jackalope.
Exactly. And then it just continued. Like, some dumbass just saw a possum, flipped out, was talking about this Coonigator they saw. But then Uncle Bob comes along and tells Uncle Pete, they get together one night and they whip up their own little Coonigator. Because Pete went to Florida, got an alligator head. You know, Bob's got the raccoon in the freezer. They whip together this Coonigator. And then they start talking about it. And it becomes a thing.
You know what this reminds me of? And
what?
It is related to the topic we're covering. Do you know of Jake the Alligator Man?
I think I've heard of him. Yeah. Go ahead and refresh me because... Yeah,
so
go ahead.
It is a fake taxidermy of the front half of a human with the back half of an alligator, and it is some museum in Washington.
Yeah, that's right.
But you know, there are legends, especially in the southeast of the U.S., of gator men. And you know, these legends were present much before this fake taxidermy was made. So somebody heard of the legends and just made this taxidermy and is now profiting off of it. So somebody could have... Per your theory, the Coonigator legend was already established before somebody created the taxidermy.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Just like jackalope. Look how many people made so much money off it, myself included.
I mean, nobody made money off the Coonigator, though.
You never know. Maybe there's something going on there that we don't know about.
Dude, I mean, maybe... Maybe you should stop making art and start making taxidermy fake animals.
I mean, you know... That would be probably really fun, but, you know, I have so many hours in a day for the projects I already have going. Maybe one day, if I go to New England, I'll stop in that town and see if anybody knows anything about it.
Oh, man. Okay, so I need to read this now. Just give me a moment so I can find it. So on Rob Morphy's post on Cryptopia.com, there is this comment, and you just now reminded me I wanted to read this. So... The comment is made by some person named Derp. And this person stated, I've lived in Vermont my whole life. So have my parents and their parents way back before this even was Vermont, a few hundred years ago. And not I nor any of them have ever heard of this. This is purely made up bullshit.
I mean, and that's a thing too. A lot of things are purely made up bullshit. but just become like folklore and legend.
I mean, that's why we're making this podcast, this episode, if anybody's even listening till now. Maybe Jordan's only listening. So
hi, Jordan.
Hi, Jordan. And I think Mothboy Matt.
Yeah, yep.
So if anybody is still listening, like, we are instigating the myth, just like we did with the Ice Kid Unk episode. Like, nobody ever did anything on it except a few paragraphs and some shitty wikis on the internet. Once we made that episode, your artwork appeared in Google searches of Ice Kid Unk.
Yep.
So I'm hoping that your art will now appear in Google searches of Kunigator. And the reason I wanted to cover this topic is because I've been searching for podcasts on the Kunigator. Nobody ever did it.
Yeah, nobody even did the Ice Kadunk either. Like, yeah. So groundbreaking.
We're filling in the gaps and we're bastardizing the disregarded.
Yep. And I'm drawing them.
And you're drawing. You said that so sadly.
I'm drawing them. Just reflective. Like, yes, I'm drawing them.
You're like, what am I doing now with my life?
No. I like drawing crazy creatures, but yeah, I'm drawing them. So if you Google Ice Kadunk, you'll see it out there.
Yeah. Hopefully they'll see the Kunigator that you did after this episode.
Oh, probably.
Now, since you're mentioning like the jackalope, that is an obvious example of fearsome critters, which you would probably know because you guys have the squonk in Pennsylvania, among other things. And fearsome critters, for those who don't know, were made up of bullshit animals who were concocted by lumberjacks as tall tales. So yes. I'd imagine that the Kunigator, if it was really a part of lore, but I can't find it in the literature, you know. If it was, it was a type of lumberjack tall tale, a fearsome critter.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's where the squonk came from. That's the county over from me, is where that originated.
I actually need to plug you now. You did artwork of the squonk, and it was like a fat piggy that was crying.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. He's an ugly, sad little thing that just cries all the time.
Yeah, and dissolves into a puddle of tears.
Exactly. And if you happen to catch him, you're not going to catch him because he dissolves and turns into bubbles.
Yeah.
Yep. The squonk.
Maybe the Kunigator. Maybe the reason nobody ever found the Kunigator is because it dissolves into trash.
It dissolves into a banana. So you're going to be walking one day and you're going to see a banana on the trail and wonder where the banana came from. It was a Kunigator.
Oh, man. Imagine if there was an epidemic of campers around Montpelier who were tripping on banana peels and it was because of the Kunigator.
Yeah, maybe that's what the Kunigator turns into. Like, squonk turns into bubbles, the Kunigator turns into a banana. We are absolute lunatics. All this is in our brains.
I also had a funny theory. So what if the Kunigator is just a raccoon, but while it was rummaging through the trash, its snout caught a croc sandal, and now it's walking around with that croc sandal because it's a crocodile-like snout?
As a Crocs aficionado, I approve of that theory.
And no wonder this thing does not appear until like the last decade or so, because Crocs were not even a thing before.
No, as far as I know, no. He'd be one stylish raccoon, though.
Yeah.
Like, he could slip it on when he's trying to fool everybody, like take it off with his hands, with thumbs.
Poor raccoon if he thinks that's stylish.
You know, hey, they're comfortable.
Says the guy who is actually wearing Crocs right now while recording.
I'm wearing Crocs too.
Oh, man.
Mine are navy blue. I got to get a new pair.
Mine are also blue. I think dark blue. Yeah.
Yeah. Mine are navy blue.
I mean, this is why we do podcasts so well, because there are a lot of synchronicities in play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Crocs aren't the coolest looking, but they're comfortable.
Hey, if a trash panda thinks that Crocs are cool, then I'm taking it for what it's worth.
I mean, I'm just saying. And they make Crocs for everybody. Like, they even have dog Crocs. Okay. Like, do yourself a favor and Google dog Crocs. It'll brighten up your day.
Listeners, Google dog Crocs.
So maybe they have raccoon. Like, so if they have Crocs that'll fit dogs, then they'll have Crocs that fit raccoons. Like, it could be a whole thing.
I'm actually searching if there is a dog crocodile cryptid right now. There is. There is something called a dogigator.
A dogigator? Okay, so I'm going to Google it right now.
A dogigator. And you know what it is?
All right.
Oh, man, the synchronicities.
Ooh, look at that.
Go into Cryptid Wiki, go to the very bottom.
Okay.
It's a fucking taxidermy of a dog and a gator.
You know, look at us. a dog-a-gator.
So we were covering the wrong creature this whole time.
Yeah, so the dog-a-gator, maybe somebody saw a mangy, like, coyote once.
Yeah.
And then furthered it, the whole folklore, and turned it into taxidermy. But actually used an alligator head.
Yeah, but this seems like a sideshow thing. It's called Daryl, this taxidermy, and it can be seen at the Abita Mystery House. Where, I don't know, it doesn't say.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's so weird.
I tell you what. We were just talking about that. Hey, though, you know, that's how it rolls for us.
I think, let me find out. So I think I saw another cryptid while I was researching. Yeah, it's called the Cooncat. It's in Georgia. And it actually did have three sightings of it that were documented.
Yeah, I did see that when I was out looking at the Coonigator. Yeah, I did
Dude,
see that.
I really think that we did the wrong hybrid alligator raccoon thingy and the least credible one.
Yeah, well, you know, but it was fun speculating and theories and everything. And everybody got a science lesson from you. So, I mean, everybody wins. Everybody wins.
I mean, as always, at least I wasn't talking about poop wheels like in the Ice Kid Unk episode.
Yep. Poop wheels. And like, what if lions had wheels instead of legs? And
And we even solved the crop circle mystery.
Yeah.
So like, to end this episode, based on our research, like, we can only find the first mention of the Coonigator in a book from 2004. And from what I see in the books, they mention Montpelier as the city name, not as some supposed mountain, not as two words. But on the internet, people have been copying and pasting this over and over with this typo for some reason. I really think this may be...
You know why, I bet you?
Why?
That they do that?
Mm-hmm.
The whole area all the way up is still in the Appalachian Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere somebody put in Mount instead of Mont because maybe they were thinking mountains.
I think there's something there called a Green Mountain as well.
Yeah. But I mean, that's all in like the Appalachian Mountain shelf, like that whole thing. So, I mean, maybe they thought it was Mount and not Mont. Somebody hit the space bar one too many times when they were typing it out.
I mean, this whole copy paste thing, and you can see that it's copy and pasted because of that one unique typo. It's all very similar to how internet urban legends spread. Basically copy pastas, those spam emails you'd get decades ago with fake stories.
Yep.
And then you'd send those to your friends and so on and so on. I think this is more of an internet urban legend.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and it possibly could be. Yep.
And we're instigating the legends by even covering it.
We certainly are.
Oh, man. It may be.
And I made art for it.
Yeah, and maybe somebody actually listens to this episode and is inspired to create their own Coonigator as a taxidermy.
You never know. You never know. We like inspiring the masses.
I know. So regarding the chupacabra, do you know that there are a lot of taxidermies of mangy coyotes which are sold as chupacabras?
Yes.
Yeah. And there is this one guy who owns a creationist museum who bought one of these mangy chupacabras.
Wow.
And is marketing it as a real chupacabra. But that's, I think, because the guy who killed the chupacabra is actually the guy who taxidermied it. He is also convinced that it's a real chupacabra.
Well, you know, mangy coyotes, I think, are fairly common. Like, it's a fairly common thing for them. And maybe we should discuss the chupacabra one episode.
Foreshadowing.
Because we could do some stuff with that.
Oh, I've actually read the whole book, so we are definitely going to do an episode.
Good.
And also, you already made art of the chupacabra, so you don't have to do more art of it.
I modeled my chupacabra more off the Puerto Rican one.
Yeah.
So, but that's, we'll talk about that later.
Foreshadowing. Ooh.
Yes, foreshadowing.
So guys, like, sorry for making this so long. I am going to do a lot of editing, but I'm going to keep most of our discussion because it was fun.
It was fun.
And that's the point of this podcast. So, like, until next time, stay safe and have a good night.
Later.
Oh, where do I stop it? Oh. Hey, for the end, guys, a few plugs related to today's episode, and I do need to mention that none of these plugs are sponsored, so these people don't even know I'm mentioning them. Like Rob Morphy, for example, who wrote the article I used as my main source. Now, you thought I was criticizing him, but no, Rob actually did amazing work on the article with the bare minimum of information we actually do have available on the Coonigator. And Rob was the only guy on the internet citing his source, so kudos to you. And if you are into cryptids and alien entities, is go on to cryptopia.us, just sift through all the articles, but most importantly, check out his show, Cryptonaut Podcast. Let's face it, guys, the show is a staple of the cryptid podcasting community. It actually inspired myself to create my own show, and it stands as an inspiration to all cryptid adjacent podcasters. Now, onto the book, Rob actually used this book as his source, and that is why I actually seeked it out for the Kunigator episode. The book is titled Monster Spotter's Guide to North America by Scott Francis. Now, this book, I like its style. It is very tongue-in-cheek and presents itself as a kind of birdwatcher's guide, but of monsters. The author is also a huge fan of The X-Files, and quotes and references the show, which is so wonderful to me. Like, the book actually opens with this line from the iconic episode Jose Chung's From Outer Space.
Don't write this book. You'll perform a disservice to a field of inquiry that has always struggled for respectability.
So, you know, very self-aware and very my style. Next up, I wanted to plug a few of the taxidermies we mentioned, but not the chupacabra one, because it was a mangy coyote, and this poor animal was killed for just looking weird due to a disease, and is now held in some kind of creationist museum as proof that science was wrong. Ugh. So first off, Jake the Alligator Man. I loved this thing as a child. It was popularized by Weekly World News, and it was discussed on a lot of cryptozoology forums back in the day when I was a kid, when we were all much more naive on the internet. But regardless of this thing's authenticity, I mean, there are rules set in place for displaying human remains. If you want to see it, and it's a miraculous sight that gained a cult following, you can find it at Marsh's Free Museum, located at 409 South Pacific Avenue in Long Beach, Washington. And the final taxidermy I'm plugging is the Doggigator. You can go see it down where alligators actually live, and it is an exhibit at Abita Mystery House, which is also known as the UCM Museum, and this is a roadside attraction at Abita Springs near New Orleans, Louisiana. And finally, guys, really, go follow Christina. Instagram at the Crescent Hair, crescent as in the moon, and hair as in the bunny. And go visit her website, thecrescenthair.com. If you enjoy the episode art, the podcast logo, and most of the art I've been using in all my episodes, go check her stuff out. You are bound to find something which will resonate with you. And I should also mention that Christina is launching a very huge project very soon. So if you want in on the fun, follow her. Links in my episode description. So until the next time, I bid you farewell again. Am I gonna keep doing these at the end of every episode? Just bye.